Our next case for argument this morning is United States against Miller. Ms. Wagoner.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, Mr. Glickman, and ladies and gentlemen of the galley, including my client's father, Mr. Miller. Terrell Miller was 23 years old with a limited education, that being a GED, and no significant prior experience with the police at 10 o'clock at night, sufficient so that the court found that what was said to him at 10 o'clock at night overbore his will. The court, in reconsidering reconsidering the voluntariness of his statements at the traffic stop and at the Greenshire residence, as identified by the government just prior to trial, found that he had reasonable intelligence because, because he had a GED and that he understood his Miranda rights. The court failed to address the monologue that Detective Foster had engaged in with Mr. Miller immediately after reading him his rights, which consisted of the right to remain silent and all that stuff. Detective Foster admitted that he explained to Mr. Miller that he was the target of a drug investigation, that they had evidence against him involving controlled buys, that they had a search warrant, and they were going to go and search his Greenshire residence. The government admits that Mr. Miller told Detective Foster that he lived with his girlfriend at the Greenshire residence at the scene of the traffic stop. If we judge coercion and overbearing of will from the standpoint of the reasonable person in Mr. Miller's position, it would have been very reasonable for Mr. Miller to have asked whether his girlfriend was subject to arrest. And if Detective Foster was honest with him, as he was later, the answer would have been yes, and that would have been a consideration interjected at the very early time of the traffic stop, which would have rendered the statements at the traffic stop involuntary. From the traffic stop, Mr. Miller was taken cuffed in the back of Detective Foster's
car. Why is a statement involuntary if an officer gives an accurate answer to a reasonable question?
Because it interjects the threat that the girlfriend will be arrested unless Detective Foster at the scene of the traffic stop made it very clear that he was going to take Mr. Miller to jail. But if Mr. Miller instead wanted to go to the back of Detective Foster's car, then Detective Foster would listen to him, but only if he talked and only if he was honest, which in other words is telling him that he does not have the right to remain silent, and if he doesn't do these things, that he and his girlfriend are subject to arrest. It's the same element of coercion as the court properly found 4 hours
later. I'm missing it. I don't understand what is coercive about telling the truth. I understand that lies may come in that category. But it's the same question in principle as when the police come to somebody's door without a warrant and say, I would like to come in, will you consent to a search? And the officer, person says, what will happen if I don't? The officer says, then I'll go get a warrant and we'll do it without your consent. And the householder then says, I consent. That's always held to be perfectly voluntary because it's a truthful statement.
Well, I respectfully disagree. As the trial judge found.
So your position rests on disagreeing with settled law.
No, settled law, as cited by the trial judge, citing United States versus Bolin, which is a Seventh Circuit case following a U.S. Supreme Court case of Rogers versus Richmond, that interjecting a threat to arrest a wife or a girlfriend imposes a coercive element in an otherwise voluntary statement. The district court in this case, analyzed the entire evening and said that all of the conversations were amiable, that there wasn't loud or argumentative kind of conduct. But I think this court and every court has to realize that in today's climate of psychological coercion, and the police are being trained in that, that they do have to look at all of the facts and circumstances from the position of the accused at the time. He was no older or wiser when he was initially stopped for his traffic offenses than he was some 4 hours later. In fact, his question to the police some 4 hours later that prompted such a rabid response was fairly innocuous. It was, what if I want to talk to a lawyer? Well, we're going to stop right now, Detective Foster said, and I'll take you and your girlfriend to jail.
How long had he been in the drug business when he was arrested? Seems to me I read it was a year.
He, during some of the conversations, he admitted that he had been selling drugs for approximately a year.
Yeah, well, he's more than somebody that just got out of the cradle.
Well, the court found that he had limited experience with the police, in part because he held an Indiana permit to carry a handgun, which you cannot carry if you have a felony conviction. His priors were driving offenses, and in fact he was driving while suspended that night. But that doesn't make it any less a threat that he's concerned about his girlfriend and his four-month-old baby, both at the scene of the traffic stop and at the Greenshire address.
He knows they've got a warrant to search there, right?
He knows that they have a warrant to search the house. Yes, he does.
So he starts telling where things are, including the gun under the bed, I believe.
And he told them that at the traffic stop after Detective Foster told him, you're going to jail. The only way you are not going to jail is if you talk to me and be honest.
Well, he knew that warrant. I mean, you can say he's unsophisticated, but couldn't he have known that warrant was a sure thing, that now they're going to find a lot of stuff, and maybe if I cooperate? And he did get to keep his truck for a day or two.
Right. And I think that the fact that he did get to keep his truck from the time of the traffic stop also underscores that he would have asked about his girlfriend. Certainly his truck wasn't more important than his girlfriend or his four-month-old baby. Detective Foster testified consistently throughout the motion to suppress and the trial that he never threatened or promised Mr. Miller in any way. Clearly that's not true. The underlying threat or promise to Mr. Miller from the very beginning was either you cooperate or you and your girlfriend are going to jail and your child is going to be put in a children's home. While the court made no specific finding on that, it's unbelievable to me that not a single officer at the Greenshire residence or at the scene of the traffic stop remembered anything at all about the baby. Even the officer who, during the motion to suppress, admitted that she had control of the baby and was playing with the baby. This is a four-month-old infant that we're talking about, and it's unbelievable that any set of parents of a four-month-old would not be very concerned about what was going to happen to the baby when armed police officers were rummaging through their home subject to a search warrant.
Yeah, well, I appreciate the maternal and paternal concern and to have a gun under the bed and be selling drugs, but, I'm sure he's concerned, but he's already been caught.
I'm not contending, Your Honor, that the drugs would not have been found at the residence, but he may not have given his statements. And certainly his statements detailed far more activity than, at least from the record, was apparent to the officers, and cast some doubt about the reliability of those statements as well, if they're indeed involuntary. If the last statement's involuntary, which I think it pretty clearly was, it was surreptitiously recorded, and under existing precedent, constituted a threat to arrest his girlfriend as well as him, which interjected something beyond Mr. Miller's own sense of what is going to happen to him. It interfered with his ability at that point to make a rational choice by putting something extrinsic into the equation other than Mr. Miller and his own conduct. And it's that makes it involuntary. And there was that discussion at the car, and there was that discussion, Detective Foster admits there was that discussion at the Greenshire residence.
Ma'am, shouldn't the officer be honest with him, though, as to what is going to happen?
Well,
not that they're going to leave. I mean, should he just say, well, we'll leave the child here?
Well, I think it's improper for the officers to try to extract a confession from someone saying
we're talking about now advising them what they are going to do with the child, that they're going to give it to some social care aid to so that the child is taken care of.
Well, the promise to Mr. Well, there's no showing that there weren't relatives that could have better cared for
That's
it.
That's why I said they told them properly that they were going to give them the child to some social care agency.
Well, they denied saying anything about the child.
All right. Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, counsel. Mr. Glickman.
May it please the court, I just wanted to briefly respond to some of the points raised by Ms. Wagner in her initial argument. What Ms. Wagner characterized as a monologue on Detective Foster's behalf to the defendant was rather an opportunity for the defendant to cooperate. There was nothing improper about Detective Foster offering, or any police officer for that matter, offering a defendant, especially a defendant in a drug case, the opportunity to cooperate with law enforcement in an attempt to arrest more people involved in the dealing of drugs. Ms. Wagner also makes a point about 10 o'clock at night. Well, what happened at 10 o'clock at night is not the subject of this appeal. And what Judge Tinder found was that at 6 o'clock, there was a lawful traffic stop. At 6:20, the defendant received his Miranda rights for the second time, indicated that he understood them, and agreed to talk to Detective Foster. Now, in the defendant's brief at page 12, there's a suggestion that the conversation was about, and I'm quoting now, Detective Foster's intention to put Mr. Miller in jail for the rest of his life if he did not cooperate. I would respectfully point out to the court that there is absolutely no evidence of that statement being made anywhere in the record. There's no part of the record that was cited to it in the brief, and it flat out did not happen. In addition, Judge Tinder, in making his findings, found that in the defendant's sworn affidavit to the court, the defendant made a number of false statements to the court regarding the circumstances of the traffic stop. The defendant falsely swore to the court that the search warrant was never read to him. Judge Tinder, in making his findings on the defendant's motion to suppress, found that the search warrant was read to Mr. Miller by Detective Foster in the front seat while they were sitting side by side. The second point that the defendant was untruthful about in a sworn affidavit to the court was he said that he was aggressively questioned for 4 hours. And Judge Tinder again found that the questioning in this case was not continuous, there were breaks taken, and that it was conversational in nature and non-adversarial. And
part of that was suppressed, wasn't it?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
Part of that was suppressed.
Yes. What happened back at the police station at 10 o'clock at night was suppressed, and it was not used at trial. But what Judge Tinder found, and what I believe was the circumstances in this case, are that there's no evidence that the defendant's statements at either the traffic stop or back at his residence were involuntary. There's no evidence whatsoever of any physical abuse. There's no evidence of any psychological intimidation on behalf of the police. They did not use deceptive interrogation tactics that overcame the defendant's free will. Basically, Judge Tinder found, and I think the evidence bears this out, that there was absolutely no coercive police activity at either the traffic stop or at the defendant's residence that led the defendant to make the statements that he made. Rather, it was an indication where the defendant was stopped. He was confronted with the evidence against him in a truthful manner. The defendant made the conscious decision that he wanted to cooperate with law enforcement. It seemed, and as Judge Tinder found, the defendant's main concern at that time was the defendant getting his pickup truck back so that if he did act as an informant with law enforcement, that the folks in the neighborhood, that their suspicion wouldn't be aroused, that he didn't have his pickup truck. And that was what Detective Foster agreed to do, although he said in the end it would ultimately be seized. The district court's findings on the voluntariness of the defendant's statements were not clearly erroneous, and I would ask the court to uphold the judgment of the district court in that regard. Beyond that, there were two sentencing issues, and unless the court has any specific questions, I would just rest on the government's brief filed in this case with respect to the sentencing issues.
You didn't cross appeal on the reduction of the 20 to 1 as opposed to 100 to 1. Of course, nope. That's we've already ruled on that now. It's about saying the judge can't just arbitrarily go and do that. So I know you said it could have been argued, but you didn't. So he got a pretty good, he got that, and he also got the other evidence suppressed, so he didn't come out as bad as he could have, I guess.
No, he got a tremendous benefit, Your Honor, and 2 weeks ago over at Notre Dame Law School, I argued the Joyner case in front of Your Honor and Judge Kaney and Judge Ripple, wherein the government took the position that a judge could not, based on a policy disagreement with the 100-to-1 differential between crack cocaine and powder cocaine, disregard that that ratio and fashion its own ratio. But yes, Mr. Miller made out better than he would have if Judge Tinder had followed the 100-to-1 ratio. But no, we did not cross appeal in this case. Appreciate Your Honor's time this morning. Thank you very much.
Anything further, Ms. Wagner?
Mr. Glickman says that there was no aggressive questioning because there was no argumentative tone or physical threats. But Detective Foster also testified when asked if he ever exerted any pressure on anyone to become an informant. His response was, well, no, I don't ever have to because most people are eager not to go to jail. Most people are eager to be informants. I suspect if we took a poll of everyone who has agreed to be an informant, we would not find very many people who classified their decision as being eager to be an informant. So it's all a matter of perspective and how you perceive what is being said to you. And that is the essence of what I believe is wrong with the court's ruling in this case. Terrell Miller was under the distinct impression, in fact, he was told by Detective Foster, that he would go to jail, and I believe that he was told his girlfriend would go to jail, unless he decided to talk and be honest, which is a...
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Ms. Wagner.
Thank you.
Case is taken under advisement.